I'm William Cooper, and you're listening to The Hour of the Time.
The Hour of the Time may be contacted at HOTT, that's H-O-T-T, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, in the state of Arizona, 85925. Our phone number is 928-333-2942, and our website is www.hourofthetime.com.
Well, folks, for those of you who are listening in the San Joaquin Valley on Saturday, now you know why I don't like to do interviews. It's really difficult to talk to the sheeple, I've got to tell you. And most of those people have not been exposed to the education that my regular listening audience is, and I lost my patience for sheeple a long, long time ago. A long time ago. Number one, they think that everybody owes them something. They think that we have to instantly put something in front of them to prove what we say every time we say it, and of course when you're on radio you can't do that. You have to instill some responsibility into the listener to listen to what you say and then go out and investigate it. But they don't want to do that. Then you have the people who want to argue from a point of faith and not deal with facts. And you get into this, tis not, put up with it. And then after about an hour and a half, we got the Wicked Witch of the West. Oh, this was a grits groupie from way back. And she was the Wicked Witch of the San Joaquin Valley. She came on, and I very politely let her have her say, which didn't make too much sense. And then I attempted to find out exactly what it was she was talking about. And then I attempted to correct her perception of what she thought I said, and then give her an answer to where she could find what she was looking for. And she wouldn't let me talk. Every time I tried to answer her questions, she started yelling into the telephone. And so I just made up my mind if the host of the show wasn't going to control the interview, then I would. And I just hung up and went about my business. And when I did that, everybody who was here, we had a live audience here, by the way. We did it from the studio, so it was going on the speakers. Everybody here started cheering and clapping. They were so happy. They were so happy that we didn't have to listen to the ignorance anymore. So now that we're back with our regular audience, who's many of you have been with me since May the 4th of 1992. Boy, it's a long time, and it just somehow doesn't seem like it's that long, and we've covered so many subjects. One of the things that those people wanted me to do was produce instant documentation through the radio. I mean, they wanted to see it right now. And, of course, you can't do that through the radio. So, you know, all of you have been listening to this broadcast. We document everything, and we give you the sources, and we send you out to prove us wrong, and none of you ever have. In fact, that's how we have converted most of you to regular listeners and to real people from your former state of sheeple, is by getting you to go out and look up the documentation that we tell you about. And, of course, when you do, you find out that it's all true. We document it in our newspaper, Veritas. My book is the most well-documented book ever published in the history of the world, containing the most suppressed information that's ever been put into one book. all documented. It's incredible. And on this program, we have gone through the treason documents and the documentation of Public Law 87-297 and 100-690 and on and on and on and on and on. On some broadcasts, we've done nothing but cite the documentation in the law, in the treaties, in Congress, in the Federal Register, in the Congressional Record, and on and on and on ad infinitum. But when you're talking to sheeple, doesn't make any difference. You see, they're coming from an emotional point rather than a logical point. And the Wicked Witch of the West, the more I tried to reason with her, the more I discovered that you needed a hot air balloon to float between her ears. Because there just wasn't anything in there. So the only thing I could do at that point, since the host would not exercise control of his own show, I left. But for those of you listening to San Joaquin Valley now on KDNO, and by the way, later in the program, I'll tell all of you what the FM, it's FM, it's real good, clear sound. So if you're in that area and you normally listen on shortwave, you'll be able to listen on to KDNO on FM, and I'll give you the frequency later. I don't have it right here in front of me, but I will get it. Richard Palmquist is up to speed on all this. He's been doing a very good job broadcasting the results of his research, and he's tried very hard to educate the people in the San Joaquin Valley, and we all know that it's really tough. I'm not kidding you. Saturday, I thought I was back again on May 4th, 1992, starting from scratch all over again. And some of you will remember some of the calls we used to get, and you know, I just lost my patience a long time ago. I'm sorry. I can't help it. It's just gone. There's nothing I can do about it. It's not in me anymore. It has vacated the premises. For those of you who are members of the Intelligence Service, or CAGI, our conference is coming up May 29th through June the 2nd. That's May the 29th through June the 2nd. If you have a single membership, or if you're a CAGI member, CAGI members are all single memberships. If you have a single membership in the Intelligence Service or you're a CAGI member, the fee is $100 per person. Per person. If you are in the Intelligence Service and you have a family membership and two family members are going to attend, the fee is $150. $150. If you have a family membership in the Intelligence Service and three or more of your family will attend, the conference fee is $200. If you are a non-member, the fee is $350 non-negotiable. $350 non-negotiable. All conference fees are non-refundable. Non-refundable. That means if you send your conference fee in and we reserve a seat for you, for those 5 days, and then all of a sudden you find out you cannot come and you call us up and say, please refund my money. We will not do that. So understand it now. It will be up to you to find somebody to fill that seat who can pay you. And if it's not a member, if you, for instance, if you were a single member and you paid $100 and you sell your seat to someone who's not a member, then they would pay you $100 and send us $250, and then you would notify us that they would be taking your seat. That's the way it works. Or you can give it away. It's up to you. But it's non-refundable, and I want to make sure that everybody out there understands that. And there's reasons for this. It's not to screw anybody or anything else. It's just that that's the way it has to be. Also, for those of you who would like to join us in the Constitution Party to put a constitutionist team of president and vice president in the White House in 1996, call 810-674-8094. Ask for Karen to send you a Constitution Party membership package. Give your name and address. Or you can fax 810-673-1954. That's 810-673-1954. Once again, the voice number where you can get some Constitution Party material sent to you or join the Constitution Party, 810 674-8094. So it's important, folks, that you do that. Our platform is the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. We don't get into all these issues that everybody's chasing their tail on. Very simply, when we do get into them, it's to say that, very simply, that the Constitution Party's stance is that all of the things that the federal government has their finger in belongs with the states and with the local state, county, and city governments, not with the federal government. We want to roll the federal government back to within the limits of the Constitution. We don't believe that the federal government has any business dictating anything about abortion, pro or con. We have people in our party who are pro-abortion, people who are against abortion. I believe that abortion is murder. But what holds us all together is our common bond of liberty. Liberty. And we believe that those decisions should remain on the local level. We don't believe in a lot of things that the federal government is doing. So if you believe like we believe, get on board with the Constitution Party and call that number that I just gave you. In South Carolina, the Constitution Party's next meeting will be held in Greenville, South Carolina. That's Greenville, South Carolina, at the Greenville Public Library on April 20th at 7 p.m. That's the Constitution Party in Greenville, South Carolina. That's for the whole state of South Carolina. And anybody from adjoining states, if you would like to drive over there, you're all welcome. The South Carolina Constitution Party's next meeting will be held in Greenville, South Carolina, at the Greenville Public Library on April the 20th at 7 p.m. The library is located at 300 College Street. It's 300 College Street in Greenville, South Carolina. Remember, the meeting is on April 20th at 7 p.m. For information, call Mark at 803-834-0992. That's Mark at 803-834-0992. Or Vic at 803-684-3155. That's Vic at 803-684-3155. Everyone is invited, whether you live in South Carolina or not. I wish I could be there. You never know. Maybe I will. I have no plans to be there, though, so don't count on it. Rally to support the Constitution. Now, remember, folks, the Conference of States comes up again for a vote in Pennsylvania. Now, remember the newspaper article I wrote to you where they lied about everything we did? Now, let's really give them a rally this time. On the 18th of April, 1995, at the Pennsylvania State Capitol, in the Rotunda, between 12 noon and 1, be there at 12 noon sharp. Rally to support your Constitution on Tuesday, April the 18th, 1995. Everybody planned to be there. It's in the Pennsylvania State Capitol in Harrisburg, in the Rotunda, at 12 noon. The theme, support the United States Constitution untampered, unchanged. Help stop the Conference of States from materializing in Pennsylvania and elsewhere. If we can beat it in Pennsylvania, we can beat it everywhere, folks. So this is the key. Everybody wants to know why I'm pushing Pennsylvania, because that's where it all started. That's where our founding fathers went there in an effort to sort of clear up some problems between the Articles of Confederation and the states. And guess what? They did just what these guys did. They got 7 members there, which was a simple majority out of the 13 original colonies. They closed the door. They suspended the rules. They declared it a constitutional convention. James Madison proposed that they write a new constitution, and guess what? They did. And that's exactly what these guys are trying to do now. You see, Benjamin Franklin, George Washington, and Thomas Jefferson would be winking at each other with this sly little smile on their face. This would be deja vu to them. It's exactly what they did. And forget all this people nonsense. The people had nothing to do with it. Didn't know what was going on. The state, the colonists, the governors of the colonies didn't know what was going on. The representatives didn't know what was going to happen. The people had nothing to do with it. Nothing. And if we don't stop this in Pennsylvania, they're going to do something else, and the people aren't going to have anything to do with that either. They're going to create a parliamentary form of government and place us under the United Nations. You watch. So show up in Pennsylvania, April the 18th, at the state capitol in Harrisburg, in the rotunda at 12 noon, to support the United States Constitution untampered, unchanged. Help stop the Conference of States in Pennsylvania, because that's the key. They want it to happen there. They'll call it Philadelphia 2. And what we do and how we affect this now will affect all Americans for all time. So take the day off. Take 3 days off. Take the family. Make a vacation of it. Participate in an historic event that will surely be written in the history books in the future. Participate, folks, in your government the way the Founding Fathers intended for us to do after they turned the tables on everybody without any participation. They understood what they did, and they were amazed at how easy it was, and they warned us never to allow another constitutional convention. If you don't believe me, go back and read their writings. They're very clear on this. The price of liberty is eternal vigilance. Thomas Jefferson said that. Now, one of the key problems in this country is people just don't know what's been going on. If you read the first issue of Veritas and the second issue of Veritas, you are probably more educated than most people in this country ever will be. If you read Perceptions magazine, you've also got a head start on the sheep, the sheeple. The people who spend most of their time concerned about whether O.J. is guilty or not. Or whether what's-his-name planted a bloody glove in the driveway. While somebody's pulling the rug right out from under their feet. Dumb. Did you know about the hidden mail order government? This is an article in Perceptions magazine by Ian C. L. Poole. Now, I didn't write this article. I don't know Ian C. L. Poole. In fact, I never heard of him until I opened Perceptions magazine, this issue that just hit the streets, and saw this article. He confirms in this article through his own research what I published in my Lese Majesty headline article in issue number 1 of Veritas. And of course, some of it is again covered and some more revealed in issue number 2. In my headline article in the Conference of the States. I'm going to read this to you. Quote, the executive branch of the federal government formed a committee in 1954 to deal with the problem of expanding and enforcing its jurisdiction in areas of the several states. The solution, coordination of state and federal legislation through an independent private agency. The chosen agency was the 1313 Metro Group, which first became important in 1930. Which I revealed in my article in issue number 1 of Veritas. With large grants from the Rockefeller and Carnegie Foundations, named after its former street address in Chicago, 1313 was the source of many of Franklin Delano Roosevelt's New Deal concepts. It collaborated with the Federal Reserve, providing legal expertise for drafting the 1933 Emergency Banking Act, which made Roosevelt dictator and every president since. Since then, it has spawned numerous offshoots, such as the Council of State Governments, which is now calling for a constitutional convention, or CONCON, or Conference of the States, later this year. The CONCON, if it happens, will be the first such event in 210 years and is seen as an attempt to dispense with the present Constitution. According to a 1962 Daughters of the American Republic magazine, troublesome and oddly uniform bills drafted by unknown political ghostwriters began appearing simultaneously in various state legislatures in 1959. This aroused citizen curiosity and led to the detection of the amazing law factory hidden in the Council of State Governments at 1313 Metro. Now, as an aside, folks, don't get all carried away with this word state. State can have many different definitions. In this case, it doesn't mean what you think it means. The Council of State Governments is an international organization with international membership of international states, if you understand what I mean. The entire 1313 group is known as the Public Administration Clearinghouse, or PAC, and that is the real source of the term PAC. Using a wartime emergency power that required federal-state cooperation in drafting legislation, the Council of State Governments set up the Committee of State Officials on suggested state legislation to perpetuate its control. States pay huge fees for membership in these legitimate-sounding private organizations to shorten the administrative process and cut state legal costs. CSOSSL issues what is effectively a mail-order catalog of laws for states and Congress. Now, very shortly, what this means is the legislators, congressmen and senators in your state house and in the federal government are lazy. They don't like to think up legislation, and they like even less to sit down and write it. So if someone comes in and hands them something that looks good and they think the public will bite on it, and they read the little synopsis that has been furnished for them to sell it to them, they never read the whole thing. They then introduce it, and more often than not, it's passed into law. So that's how this works. The Council of State Governments, now financed through the Ford Foundation and the Rockefeller-dominated Chase Manhattan Bank, also drafts executive orders for the president. Now, the Council of State Government laws adopted by its member states include dubious attempts to establish Council of State Government legitimacy. For example, the Council of State Governments is hereby declared to be a joint governmental agency of this state and of the other states which cooperate through it. And another one is, it shall be the function of this commission to carry forward the participation of this state as a member of the Council of State Governments, in short, do all such acts as will enable this state to do its part or more than its part in forming a more perfect union among the various governments in the United States and in developing the Council of State Governments for that purpose, end quote. Problem is, it's unconstitutional. You see, the Constitution forbids any state to enter into any agreement or contract with any other state without permission of the federal Congress. This type of legislation required to activate the Council of State Government membership is regarded by some legal authorities as a compact. It is a compact. It's an agreement. The Council of State Governments also is incorporated under the 501c3. Which means it's forbidden to engage in political activities. But that is its entire purpose. The Constitution, Article 1, Section 10, Paragraph 3, requires the consent of Congress to validate compacts between states, and that includes agreements. The article expressly forbids states from entering any confederation, agreement, compact, or treaty, except the United States. It would appear that the entire Council of State Governments alliance is then in direct violation of the Constitution. The Council of State Governments, in a new attempt to transfer state power to the federal courts, suggests adding the following words to the 10th Amendment. Quote, whether a power is one reserved to the states or to the people shall be decided by the courts, end quote. What do you think about that? I think they better not try it. The Council of State Governments membership interlocks with the Council on Foreign Relations and international bodies such as the International Union of Local Authorities and the Committee on International Municipal Cooperation, whose original purpose was to send American money to the former Soviet Union and its satellites. And membership also includes some foreign state governments. Yet another council of, Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen. Another CSG affiliate, the International Federation for Documentation, sent money, law enforcement information, and legal documents to communist East Germany. IFD now assists FinCEN, BATF, and Interpol to lead international cooperation in standardizing identity documents and numbers and laws relating to drugs, tax, and money transfers. According to its 1994 report, the Council on Foreign Relations now has 3,136 members, including five Rockefellers, Bill Clinton, Newt Gingrich, and Alan Greenspan of the Federal Reserve. Their publications over the years have outwardly promoted one world government, the dissolution of national sovereignty, and an end run around the Constitution of the United States of America to bring about one world government under the United Nations. Ordinary Council on Foreign Relations membership requires a secret, difficult reference procedure and is almost impossible to obtain. However, one can join as a corporate member for just $10,000 a year. Those of you with $10,000 might consider it just to find out what the hell's going on, if for no other reason. You won't not ever be a member of the inner circle, but everything that's decided will filter down to you, and you are expected to go down and promote it to the public. The Council of State Governments has 200 corporate members, each paying $3,000 annually. Some corporate members include Abbott Laboratories. See Awesome News, page 81 in this issue. American Express, American Medical Association, Amoco, AT&T. Remember the ad, AT&T, One World, One Card? What do you think that's all about? Dun & Bradstreet, Ford Motor Company, GTE, Telephone Operations, MasterCard International, Sandoz Pharmaceuticals, TRW, and others. And that article will be continued in the next issue of Perceptions. This is the May-June 1995 issue, folks. Get it. Read it. Perceptions complements what we do here. Only they try to bring disparate groups together and stop the nonsense of, well, you know. So,
try, without a never can try. To where we should have been, all for the people who've been long forgotten and just ignored again. Pride, with our American pride, we need American pride to rebuild America, and we're working hard for the payment of our just surviving. While tax-paying suckers are what we'll become, while living on a reservation. Pride, with our American pride, we need American pride to rebuild America. So reach out your hand to help someone and learn to understand them, for we as a nation can make together rebuild again. Pride is your American pride. We need American pride to rebuild American pride. Are you America's pride? Be an American pride.
That's my friend Paul Story. He's putting together another album for us that he says is going to knock my socks off, and I can't wait to hear it. He wrote that. played all the instruments, sang all the different tracks, played all the different tracks, and recorded all the different recording stuff, and cut the album and sent it out here and said, here, this is yours, and I'm making you another one. It's amazing. It is amazing. Extremely talented man. Extremely talented. Now, if you could just remember not to call me within 1 hour of the show starting. He likes to call and talk, and I love to talk to him. Let's get into something here that concerns us all. Concerns me because I have a little daughter. Concerns you because many of you have children, and if you don't, maybe you will someday, or maybe you have grandchildren, or maybe you have nieces and nephews, or somebody young that you care about. If you don't care about anybody young, then you don't need to listen to this, because basically my philosophy is, if you don't care about anybody that's young in this country, then we just flat don't care about you. What do you think about that? I'm going to be talking about the National Education Association. And it is important, ladies and gentlemen, that you listen to every word that I'm going to tell you. You see, people look around in this country for an enemy and they can't find one. They can't find one because the enemy is all around you, but you don't perceive them as being an enemy because they don't project it. You see, everything that's happening to us is not happening from without, it's happening from within. It's a grab for power. The watchwords of the French Revolution were liberty, equality, and fraternity, which at first sound quite commendable, don't they? The words that actually began the French Revolution were, and I quote, now is the time, end quote. If you look around, you'll see those words being used more and more in this country, and it will surprise you exactly who is using them. I'll say it again for you so you can listen for it. Quote, now is the time, end quote. See, our forefathers were escaping from tyranny. They were escaping from religious persecution. They were escaping from persecution by kings and queens and despots. They were escaping from British Freemasonry. They were escaping from what was taking hold on the continent, which caused the French Revolution, which eventually became known as socialism. You see, Marx didn't invent socialism. It was invented a long, long time before he came along. He just put it into words. He wrote down the tenets of socialism. There's a battle going on underground between power groups. And there are four main groups, ladies and gentlemen. Now, I'm not going to go into that tonight because I've done it many, many times. I want to talk about the NEA tonight, the National Education Association. The watchwords of the French Revolution were liberty, equality, and fraternity. By liberty was meant license to do your own thing. Morality, rebelling against authority. By equality was not meant equal opportunity, but a leveling of the masses under philosopher kings and elite, including educational, who through social engineering would shape a socialistic society. And by fraternity was not meant a brotherhood based upon the Holy Bible or based upon the kinship of human beings, but rather a humanistic brotherhood based upon what all ethical systems have in common, headed by a master race who consider themselves to be the only truly mature minds in the world, and the other races and the masses of people are the children to be taken care of by these councils of wise men, they call themselves. Now, humanistic education is religious proselytizing of students in opposition to biblical beliefs and it's evident from a statement by John Dewey, who is the co-author of the first Humanist Manifesto, coincidentally published in 1933. If you really think it's a coincidence, you better think again. He was also the Honorary National Education Association President, ladies and gentlemen, in 1932. In Religion and Our Schools, published in the Hibbert Journal in July 1908, John Dewey said this, and I quote, "Our schools are performing an infinitely religious work. They are promoting the social unity out of which, in the end, genuine religious unity must grow. Religion, associated with dogmatic beliefs, we see disappearing. It is the part of man to labor persistently and patiently for the clarification and development of the positive creed of life and to work for the transformation of all practical instrumentalities of education till they are in harmony with these ideas," end quote. John Dewey was a 33rd degree Freemason of the Scottish Rite. It's the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry that promoted the National Education Association, promoted public school systems run by state governments, and now has promoted the United States Department of Education to turn all of our kids over to Big Brother. And we've got all of their publications over all these years to prove every word that I just said. Coincidentally, their magazine used to be called The New Age. The non-dogmatic positive creed of life, which Dewey would come to call a common faith, was like the humanistic brotherhood and sisterhood of the French Revolution, also brought about by Freemasonry. And the NEA has been perhaps the organization most responsible for furthering the principles of the French Revolution in the United States in this century. Folks, the chronology of this labor union during all this time is absolutely incredible. And I'm going to give you some of it tonight. I don't have time to give all of it to you. But I have some time to give you some of the important points and dates so that you too can become illumined, shall we say? 1906. On June 30th, the National Education Association becomes federally chartered or incorporated under H.R. 10501, Public Law Number 398. The National Education Association had been founded in 1857, but until 1870 was called the National Teachers Association. How many of you knew that? The NEA begins to promote the training of teachers in sex education and sex hygiene. Guess what year that was? 1912. The NEA began to promote the training of teachers in sex education and sex hygiene. In 1913, the NEA established the Commission on the Reorganization of Secondary Education, which had a membership including several young rebels of the era. The Commission produced a report in 1918 containing seven cardinal principles or objectives for the education of every American boy and girl, including ethical character. In 1915, the Educational Trust, known as the Cleveland Group because its first meeting is in Cleveland, meets for the first time. Among the members of the group are George Strayer, a professor at Teachers College and NEA president 1918 to 1919. Elwood Cubberley, Dean of Stanford University School of Education and leader of the Educational Trust. Charles Judd, a colleague of John Dewey, who received his Ph.D. from Wilhelm Wundt in Leipzig in 1896. And David Tyack's and Elizabeth Hansott's Managers of Virtue, printed in 1982, Judd is quoted as urging the Cleveland Conference to attempt, and I quote, "the positive and aggressive task of a detailed reorganization of the materials of instruction in schools of all grades, end quote. Tyock and Hansot will also write, and I quote, there were placement barons, usually professors of educational administration in universities such as Teachers College, Harvard, University of Chicago, or Stanford, who had an inside track in placing their graduates in important positions. One educator commented, after spending a weekend with Cubberly in Palo Alto, that, quote, Cubberly had an educational Tammany Hall that made the Strayer Engelhart Tammany Hall in New York look very weak. And one principal recalled Strayer's law for dealing with disloyal subordinates as give 'em the axe, end quote. This was the beginning of a plan to use the credentialing process of teachers to control education. In 1932, the father of progressive education, John Dewey, was made the honorary president of the National Education Administration, Association, and in 1933 co-authored the first Humanist Manifesto. In 1934, Dewey authored A Common Faith, in which he proclaimed, and I quote, it is impossible to ignore the fact that historic Christianity has been committed to a separation of sheep and goats, the saved and the lost, the elect and the mass, those outside the fold of the church, and those who do not rely upon belief in the supernatural have been regarded as only potential brothers, still requiring adoption into the family. I cannot understand how any realization of the democratic ideal as a vital moral and spiritual ideal in human affairs is possible without surrender of the conception of the basic division to which supernatural Christianity is committed, end quote. In 1934, in July, at the 72nd annual meeting of the National Education Association held in Washington, D.C., in a report titled Education for the New America, Willard Gibbons, who will become executive secretary of the NEA in 1935 and serve for 17 years, said this, quote, a dying laissez-faire must be completely destroyed, and all of us, including the owners, must be subjected to a large degree of social control. An equitable distribution of income will be sought, and the major function of the school is the social orientation of the individual. It must seek to give him understanding of the transition to a new social order, end quote. Now, Gibbons had submitted similar language, folks, in the report of the Committee on Education for the New America of the Department of Superintendents of the National Education Association at the department's meeting in Cleveland on February 28th of this year. I don't know why I keep trying to say administration. It's association. I apologize for that. December of the same year, the NEA Journal editor Joy Elmer Morgan writes an editorial calling for government control of corporations. In 1938, on June 29th, the New York Herald Tribune, covering the National Education Association Convention in New York City, reports, and I quote, Dr. Goodwin Watson, professor of education at Teachers College, Columbia University, begged the teachers of the nation to use their profession to indoctrinate children to overthrow conservative reactionaries directing American government and industry. He declared that Soviet Russia was one of the most notable international achievements of our generation. And in 1940, the National Education Association begins promoting the Building America Social Studies texts, which a California Senate Investigating Committee on Education will later condemn for its subtle support of Marxism or socialism contrary to American values. In 1942, in December, the National Education Administration The National Education Association Journal, editor Joy Elmer Morgan, writes an editorial, quote, the United Peoples of the World, end quote, explaining a world organization's or world government's need for an educational branch a world system of money and credit, a uniform system of weights and measures, a world police force, and other agencies. In 1946, in January, the National Education Association Journal publishes The Teacher and World Government by Joy Elmer Morgan, editor of the NEA Journal from 1921 through 1955, in which he proclaims, and I quote, "In the struggle to establish an adequate world government, the teacher can do much to prepare the hearts and minds of children for global understanding and cooperation. At the very top of all the agencies which will assure the coming of world government must stand the school, the teacher, and the organized profession," end quote. In April, the National Education Association Journal prints National Education in an International World by L. Candle of Teachers College, Columbia University, who comments, quote, "The establishment of the United Nations Education, Cultural, and Scientific Organization marks the culmination of a movement for the creation of an international agency for education which began with Comenius. Nations that became members of UNESCO accordingly assume an obligation to revise the textbooks used in their schools. Each member nation, if it is to carry out the obligations of its membership, has a duty to see to it that nothing in its curriculum, courses of study, and textbooks is contrary to UNESCO's aims," end quote. In August of the same year, the NEA sponsors a world conference of the teaching profession. Representatives from 28 nations are present, which drafts a constitution for a world organization of the teaching profession. The organization will hold its first regular meeting in August 1947 in Glasgow, Scotland, and will be a mighty force in aiding UNESCO. In the words of William Carr, Associate Secretary of the NEA's Education Policies Commission, in 1947, in October, the National Education Association Journal includes On the Waging of Peace by NEA official William Carr, who states, quote, "As you teach about the United Nations, lay the ground for a stronger United Nations by developing in your students a sense of world community. The United Nations should be transformed into a limited world government. The psychological foundations for wider loyalties must be laid. Teach about the various proposals that have been made for strengthening the United Nations and the establishment of world law. Teach those attitudes which will result ultimately in the creation of a world citizenship and world government. We cannot directly teach loyalty to a society that does not yet exist, but we can and should teach those skills and attitudes which will help to create a society in which world citizenship is possible." And in 1948, Education for International Understanding in American Schools, Suggestions and Recommendations, is produced by the NEA with partial funding by the Carnegie Corporation and contains the following statements. Quote, "The idea has become established that the preservation of international peace and order may require that force be used to compel a nation to conduct its affairs within the framework of an established world system. As an aside, ladies and gentlemen, that is what is happening now, and the military forces of the United States of America is functioning as the world police force under the United Nations." I continue. "The most modern expression of this doctrine of collective security is in the United Nations Charter. Many persons believe that enduring peace cannot be achieved so long as the nation-state system continues as at present constituted. It is a system of international anarchy, a species of jungle warfare. Enduring peace cannot be attained until the nation states surrender to a world organization the exercise of jurisdiction over those problems with which they have found themselves unable to deal singly in the past." And in 1952, the National Training Laboratories, NTL, becomes a part of the National Education Association. The NTL, or National Training Laboratories, was founded in 1947 and sponsored by the NEA's Division of Adult Education Service. In 1968, the NTL will separate from the NEA and become an independent organization, and it will later be called the NTL Institute for Applied Behavioral Science. And that happened in 1986. 1962. Issues in Human Relations Training is published by the National Training Laboratories of the National Education Association. And in this book, the editors write that human relations are sensitivity training, quote, fits into a context of institutional influence procedures, which includes coercive persuasion in the form of thought reform or brainwashing. The book also includes information about, and I quote, change agent skills and unfreezing, changing and refreezing attitudes. And in David Jenkins' essay in the book, he explains that the laboratories conducted by the NTL have recently moved from an emphasis on skill training to sensitivity training. And he declares that the trainer has no alternative but to manipulate. His job is to plan and produce behavior in order to create changes in other people. The manual also states regarding children that although we appear to behave appropriately, this appearance is deceptive. We are pseudo-healthy persons who can benefit from sensitivity training, end quote. April 26th of the same year, the Tulsa Tribune, after learning that the NEA had a file on its editor under Critics of Education, printed an editorial asking, quote, what is the function of the National Education Association? To improve the education of America's children or to stifle criticism of present educational methods, end quote. In October of the same year, the Chicago Sun-Times publishes an editorial stating, quote, that the National Education Association advocated federal aid has surprised us at times, but no longer. For control, real control over the nation's children is being shifted rapidly to the National Education Association. That organization has about completed the job of cartelizing public school education under its own cartel. It is doing so under an organization known as the National Council for Accreditation of Teachers' Education, an agency whose governing council is tightly NEA-controlled. The manner in which the NEA is usurping parental prerogatives by determining the type of education offered is very simple. Control the education and hiring of teachers. NEA has no apprehension regarding federal control of public schools as a consequence of federal aid. It has control itself. It is extending that control over colleges and universities, which are all Marxist now. In the NEA scheme of things, it will be a simple matter to extend control over whatever Washington agency handles the funds. End quote. October 20th of the same year, the New York Times publishes, quote, McMurrin insists he quit to teach, end quote, by Wallace Turner, in which he writes that before Sterling McMurrin resigned as U.S. Commissioner of Education, Dr. McMurrin told NEA head William Carr, quote, you and I head up the biggest bureau, that's bureaucracies, you and I head up the biggest bureaucracies in Washington. The National Education Association has all of the bureaucratic shortcomings and is in danger of moving toward national control of education, not by the federal government, but by the NEA, end quote. In 1963, March and April, a special supplement of AV Communication Review is published as monograph number 2 of the Technologically Development Project of the NEA. The project, ladies and gentlemen, is under contract number SAE-9073 with the United States Office of Education of Health, Education, and Welfare as authorized under Title VII, Part B of the National Defense Education Act of 1958. The contractor is the NEA, and in this supplement you will find, and I quote, another area of potential development in computer applications is the attitude-changing machine. Dr. Bertram Raven in the psychological department at the University of California in Los Angeles is in the process of building a computer-based device for changing attitude. This device will work on the principle that students' attitudes can be changed effectively by using the Socratic method of asking an appropriate series of leading questions logically designed to right the balance between appropriate attitudes and those deemed less acceptable. End quote. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, brainwashing. 1967, Humanizing Education. The Person in the Process is edited by Robert Leeper for the Association for Supervision and Curriculum Development of the National Education Association and contains Carl Rogers' article, quote, The Interpersonal Relationship and the Facilitation of Learning, in which Rogers declares, The goal of education is the facilitation of change, end quote. Rogers was taught by William H. Kilpatrick at Teachers College, where he received his Ph.D. in 1931. As a psychiatrist, he originated client-centered psychotherapy and helped found, with Abraham Maslow, Rollo May, Ira Prokof, and others, the Association for Humanistic Psychology in 1962. In October, the NEA Journal publishes Helping Children to Clarify Values by Lois E. Ratz, Merrill Harmon, and Sidney B. Simon, in which the authors declare, and I quote, The old approach seems to be to persuade the child to adopt the right values rather than to help him develop a valuing process. Clarifying is an honest attempt to help a student look at his life and to encourage him to think about it in an atmosphere in which positive acceptance exists. The teacher must work to eliminate his own tendencies to moralize. And in November, the NEA Journal publishes The New Social Studies, in which one will read, quote, Probably the most obvious change occurring in the social studies curriculum is a breaking away from the traditional dominance of history, geography, and civics. Materials from the behavioral sciences, sociology, social psychology, are being incorporated into both elemental and secondary school programs. The NEA Executive Secretary Sam Lambert comments, NEA will become a political power second to no other special interest group. NEA will have more and more to say about how a teacher is educated, whether he should be admitted to the profession, and whether he should stay in the profession. And I will continue this tomorrow night. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. God bless you all.
Don't take us back to where we were, but to where we should have been. All for the people who've been long forgotten and just ignored again. Right with our American pride. We need American pride to rebuild America, and we're working hard for the payment of our just surviving. While taxpaying suckers are what we'll become, while living on a reservation. Pride with our American pride. We need American pride to rebuild America. So reach out your hand to help someone and learn to understand them. For we as a nation can make the climb together, rebuild again. Pride with your American pride. We need American pride to rebuild American pride. Are you America's pride? Be an American pride.
You've been listening to The Hour of the Times, brought to you by Swiss America Trading, 1-800-289-2646. Probably the only place I know of where you're safe. Getting your hands on some real money. And if you don't know what real money is, you better call them and talk to them. Have you ever held a real gold or silver coin in your hand? Many of you have not. Some of you have, but the memories are becoming dim, and now you're trading with something that is worth nothing at all, and they're telling you that the something that is worth nothing at all is now declining in value. How can that happen? Think about it, and don't miss tomorrow night's The Hour of the Time.